This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today's program focuses on ballot issues. Coming up, we'll hear from Citizens Research Council of Michigan President Eric Lufer on some ideas for changing Michigan's initiative process for getting proposed laws and possible constitutional amendments on the ballot. But before we discuss policy, we're going to look at political implications of ballot proposals. For that, we're joined by Western Michigan University political science professor John Clark. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So when the petitions were submitted for a citizen-initiated law that would legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Michigan, some Republicans in the legislature said they were willing to consider passing that into law rather than letting it go on the ballot. Now, there's a policy reason for doing that because it's easier to amend the law if the legislature approves it. But there was also some talk of the political implications here about that a proposal to legalize marijuana on the ballot could hurt Republican candidates. Based on what we know about ballot issues and other elections, were Republicans in the legislature right to be concerned about the politics?
Well, there certainly is a possibility that a ballot proposal, any ballot proposal, could affect turnout levels. And turnout levels, of course, matter in elections because it doesn't matter what people in general think. It matters what voters do. And by voters, I mean people who actually show up to vote. In this case, and we'll sort of dig a little deeper in a minute, but in this case, it appears to be an issue that some folks, at least, who otherwise might be less likely to vote, might be interested in. Which means then that if they show up in close races, that could tip the scale. So at the margins, it's at least a possibility. And given the fact that Republicans are in control of the legislature, want to remain in control of the legislature, they have the opportunity to pass legislation that would, you know, sort of make the ballot proposal moot. And as such, that might turn out to be a good thing for them. On the other hand, might not make any difference at all.
And as it turned out, the legislature did not act on it, so it will be on the
ballot
in November.
So it will be on the ballot, yep.
There's, of course, a two-step process there. One is you show up to vote. The other thing is that you actually go ahead and cast your vote on things beyond that ballot issue, which is what, in this case, we're assuming is driving somebody to the polls. Do we know if people then fill out the rest of the ballot, or are there perhaps people who just show up and say, yeah, I want to legalize marijuana, or I want to ban this thing?
Yeah, that's really the important question. And so for folks who are interested in outcomes, and folks who are running campaigns, things like that, that's really, for them, the central issue. Michigan is one of about half the states, I guess, in the country that have the opportunity for citizens to vote directly on public policy issues. There's a lot of variation across states. Relative to some, it's harder to get stuff on the ballot in Michigan than in some other places. It's easier in Michigan than in some other places. What we've seen in the past is that about half of the things that show up on the Michigan ballot for voters to decide end up passing, and about half of them fail. But if we look at these kinds of issues, not just in Michigan, but more broadly, there are a couple of examples that people often point to as being, to use a phrase that you used earlier before we were on the air, the gold standard of impact of a ballot proposal on an election outcome. And the one that oftentimes people turn to is the presidential election in 2004, specifically in the state of Ohio. You may remember those folks who are students of ancient history will recall that 14 years ago, the 2004 election pitted George W. Bush, the incumbent, against Democratic nominee John Kerry. It was a close election, not as close as the 2000 election had been, but it was still close. And essentially, the election came down to the results in Ohio. It wasn't super close. It was about 100,000 votes in Ohio. As I recall, but that's still relatively close. And it turns out that in Ohio, there was a same-sex marriage ban that was on the ballot. And after the election, sort of looking back, as political scientists and other observers of politics often do, people said, wow, if that same-sex marriage ban had not been on the ballot, Kerry would have won Ohio. And if he won Ohio, he would have won the Electoral College. We would have had President Kerry instead of a second term of President Bush. That's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of what-ifs there.
Right.
But what made that ballot proposal potentially effective as a vote mobilizer was the fact that it wasn't just something that was on the ballot. It was used as a vehicle, particularly in churches, conservative churches, both Protestant and Catholic conservative churches, as a way of mobilizing voters, not just on Election Day, but before that, making sure that church members were registered to vote. And that was organized around sort of existing institutions in society. Just putting on the ballot might not make a difference, but using it as a way to change the shape of the electorate, the composition of the electorate, that's where you have the potential in a close race to tip the balance. And it turned out Ohio was close.
So the counter to the link between the ballot proposal and the candidate, 2004, as you just mentioned, the counter to that could be 2006 in Michigan. Democrats had a very good year, including the reelection of Governor Granholm. They did quite well in state legislative races. It was a good year for Democrats nationwide, we should say. But there were some conservative ballot proposals, including one which banned the use of race and gender for hiring by the state or for university admissions. In other words, a ban on affirmative action in some areas that was approved by voters by a pretty large margin. I guess could we look at the question here of whether an election is just one ballot or whether there perhaps are several separate elections which are being decided as you go down your ballot. There's candidates, there's ballot proposals, et cetera.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that differentiates successful ballot proposals from unsuccessful proposals, there are multiple dimensions, but one is whether or not it taps into some underlying partisan affiliation on the part of voters. And so if it is the case that a proposal seems like it's partisan in nature, that probably works against it in Michigan, because it may mean that folks from one party are very much in support of it, but it probably means that folks from the other party are very much opposed to it if it's defined in that partisan way. And typically it's the case that these independent or unaffiliated voters, they tend to be pretty skeptical about proposals that they view at least as being partisan proposals. Whether or not affirmative action really is one of those kinds of proposals in part depends on the way it's framed. And in that election context, it may make a difference. That's at least one of the things that could come into play. There are other things that matter as well, and at least for now with the marijuana proposal, it doesn't appear that it's going to be framed as a partisan issue. But that's one way of sort of changing the nature of the debate, changing the tenor of that discussion in a way that could make it more difficult for a proposal like that to pass. But again, there's a whole lot of what-ifs that are involved in that as well.
Can the causation go the other way? Can you have a ballot proposal which in any given year may struggle to get support? Could be a 50-50 question a lot of years. But because of the dynamics of the rest of the ticket, perhaps the top of the ballot where we always look, president in a presidential election year, but maybe in a year like this, governor and United States senator, can those things influence the rest of the ballot in a way that perhaps an initiative gets across the finish line in one year, where perhaps in another year it wouldn't?
Absolutely. And that gets back to the question that we were talking about before, is who actually shows up to vote? Turnout is so important, and not just the number of voters, but the differential turnout, the types of voters that are choosing to show up relative to those who are choosing not to participate. And so if in a particular election year, you get a wave election in terms of the types of people who are showing up to support a particular candidate or set of candidates, and they vote all the way to the end of the ballot, that could very much have an impact on the outcome of a ballot proposal. If the electorate looks different, if it's got a different composition, then it could be that a close vote would go the other way, absolutely.
Can ballot issues impact each other? If the ballot gets too crowded, do voters perhaps view them more skeptically? If there are perhaps ballot issues which seem to be kind of going in the same direction, might voters look at those and say, you know, these actually do sound like things that I support, even if I haven't looked at them in great depth?
Yeah, and we see that a lot more in other states than Michigan. There are states where it's relatively easy to get things on the ballot, where, you know, voters have dozens of decisions to make on Election Day just on public policy issues, oftentimes on proposals that seem to be contradictory. Sometimes what happens is people just sort of throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to vote on any of them. Sometimes folks have different decision rules, like I'm going to vote against all of them just because I don't know. and I'd rather be sort of safe than sorry, right? We'll keep the status quo by rejecting these proposals rather than allowing the status quo to change in a way that I might not necessarily like, but I'm not invested enough to know very much about what the outcomes are. In Michigan, we tend to have, you know, relatively fewer proposals. Most years, we don't have more than a couple. Some years, we don't have any. This is a year where we don't know yet, but there could be an awful lot of things on the ballot for people to decide, and at least a couple of them might, you know, be on the same issue, but approaching it from different directions. Generally speaking, I think what we might see under those circumstances is people just not voting all the way to the end of the ballot, or folks just sort of saying, no, 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 maybe yes on this one, no, no, no on the rest of them. In which case, you know, we end up with potentially at least a lot of money spent on proposals, but not much change in terms of public policy outcomes.
Which is kind of what happened in 2012 in Michigan.
Exactly.
Five proposals on the ballot, none of them passed.
And five is not a huge number. Right. And yet it was easy for folks who were opposed to some of them, if not all of them, to say, look, just vote no. You know, here's a lot. This is a lot for you to keep in mind, but just don't worry about the specifics of any one of them. Just vote no on all of them. And then if these things really are important, then the legislature can deal with them later.
There's a lot of dynamics, as we've discussed, which impact election results. Of course, you know, turnout's a big one. Who shows up? How many voters show up and who are they? Are those dynamics in any way differentiated when we talk about candidates and ballot proposals? Does a wave election necessarily for one party or the other mean anything for ballot questions, or are these very separate things?
I think usually they're pretty separate. Now, if we look at, in particular, this legalization of marijuana proposal, there are some things in the data, at least national polling data, that suggests that there certainly is some similarity between the kinds of decisions that voters might make on the proposal and the kinds of decisions that they might make in terms of contests for public office where they're choosing candidates. So that, for instance, the Pew Research Center did a survey earlier in the year, a national survey, not just looking at Michigan. And what they found was that younger citizens are way more likely to support marijuana legalization in general. And as folks get older, they become less likely to support that kind of legalization. We also know that younger voters are more likely, right now at least, to support Democratic candidates if they show up at the polls, and older voters are more likely to support Republican candidates. That doesn't mean that everybody that's past a certain age only votes Republican. It doesn't mean that everybody that's younger than a certain age only votes for Democrats. But generally speaking, we see this pattern across age cohorts. That's the way it looks right now. It doesn't always look that way. What it suggests, though, is that for those voters who actually vote, right, that show up and become voters, there seems to be a connection between their likelihood of supporting Democratic candidates and supporting the legalization of marijuana, at least in the national picture. And that suggests that if Democrats can use the marijuana proposal as a way to get potential voters to the polls, that's likely to help them in terms of candidate races. And if that's the case, then where we started out with all this, the concerns of at least some Republican legislators seem to be sort of reasonable concerns.
All right. I'm sure that we will have much more to talk about in the months ahead. But John Clark, as always, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
John Clark is a political science professor at Western Michigan University. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A recent blog post from the Citizens Research Council of Michigan says, anytime Michigan stands alone in some state practice, we should ask if it is being innovative or stuck in the mud. In this case, that practice is how citizen-led initiatives for new laws or possible amendments to the state constitution are approved for the ballot. Eric Lufer is president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Thank you very much for being with us again, Eric.
Gordon, it's a pleasure to be back.
So tell us, first of all, not every state actually allows citizens to propose laws or amendments to the state constitution through initiative, but for those that do, what makes Michigan's process so unique?
Yeah, so about half of the states do allow citizen-initiated laws or constitutional amendments, and many of them are the other side of the Mississippi, but Michigan and Ohio and a few other states around us allow this. And the question is a matter of timing. Right now in Michigan, anybody can propose a petition to initiate a law or change the Constitution. The Board of State Canvassers is a ministerial body. It has very little authority to do anything other than to look at the number of petition signatures and say, is that greater than the number required, or looking at the results of an election and certifying that the winning candidate had more votes than the losing candidate. So has no real authority to decide if the petition was written in the right way or the substance of the proposed change is consistent with state law or anything else. So somebody wants to propose a change, they have the ability to go to the Board of State Canvassers and say, is that petition consistent with state law? So again, a very ministerial thing. Is it the right size font? Is the title in the right place? Does it do the basic things? Every other state that has this sort of citizen-initiated process has an approval process before anybody goes out to start collecting signatures, where you have to get sign-off on this. And they have a process for looking at the substance of the proposed changes to decide, are you proposing something that is in violation of U.S. constitutional law? Are you doing something that is inconsistent with other provisions in Michigan constitutional law or statutory law? Is it going to cost us money? They put in provisions for some sort of a fiscal analysis to say, it looks like it's a great idea, it's going to help people in Michigan, but it's going to cost money. Let's decide how much that is and understand that up front. And by doing this up front, you're first of all eliminating these rushes to the courthouse when somebody turns in a petition that you don't like and you want to keep it off the ballot. Everything is decided up front, and if we can agree on what it is, whether you like it or not, the whole legal challenges and injecting the courts into this sort of very political process is headed off ahead of time. And there's greater faith in what's being done. And it allows the people, when they're being asked to sign a petition, to have greater confidence in what it is they're signing.
You cite a couple of examples from this year in your blog, including the proposal for a part-time legislature, which eventually was dropped. But as you note, the group that wanted to do this actually submitted their petitions three times and then ultimately decided to forego the process of getting pre-approval from the Board of State Canvassers. And then, after they had collected signatures, they decided to change their language. I'm wondering, in this case, is that a real problem with the process, or did this group in particular make a series of mistakes that would have been problematic under many different forms of getting petitions approved?
So the problem with this process is you have a bunch of like-minded people who come together and say, let's circulate a petition because we can't get a legislature to do what we want. So let's circulate a petition to propose change, sort of circumvent the legislature. So they're all thinking the same way, and the proposals don't see the light of day. When you have a legislative proposal, you have to give it to the Legislative Service Bureau, so you have a lawyer saying, I don't quite understand what you're saying here. And then it gets introduced in committee, and you have 10 people looking at it saying, did you think of this or that? And people coming to testify who are affected by it saying, I understand what you're doing, but you didn't think about these types of provisions. But in this petition process, there's nobody providing input. So the Clean Michigan group, who wanted a part-time legislature, drafted their constitutional amendment, and tried to get the sign-off on that it was okay, and they had problems putting that together. And then they finally went out in the field and started collecting signatures, and people started coming to them saying, well, you didn't think of this or that. Those are all things that could have been done if we had this sort of process that other states have before they collected their first signature. There would have been lawyers or interested parties saying, I understand what you're doing, but you haven't thought of this or that. So they sort of got it in a very informal way and decided that they needed to pull it out of the field and start over. But it cost them time, and it cost them some smear on their reputation a little bit because they didn't do this sort of due diligence ahead of time.
In the case of Voters Not Politicians, that got held up by a lawsuit by a group which opposes what they're proposing. Could you argue that in that case, maybe what's happening here is the Board of State Canvassers is doing their job in a somewhat unorthodox way? As you say, their job is mainly to approve the form of petitions and figure out if they got enough valid signatures. In this case, they're just holding the process up because they say they want to see what happens in court.
Yes, but it shouldn't be in court at this point. We should have dealt with these issues ahead of time. We should have asked the question of whether every constitutional provision, current constitutional provision, that would be changed or abrogated by doing what the Voters Not Politicians proposal puts forth has been thought of and addressed before the group went out and started collecting petitions. So the Board of State Canvassers, they simply, let's hit the pause button and see what the courts say. So yes, they're doing what they should do. But all this should have been done before the first signature was gathered, before the first dollar was put into printing the petitions and doing all the things that are required to collect 425,000 signatures.
Is there a guarantee of keeping the courts out of this? I mean, they're a separate, co-equal branch of government. Someone can always perhaps find a reason why the process wasn't done correctly, or have other states, by and large, been able to keep these cases from getting into court or getting before a judge?
So I would say, you're not going to preclude legal action. We all know that we're very prone to take people to court to try to keep things from happening. But we don't see the number of lawsuits over these provisions, all these proposal processes, in other states like we do in Michigan, because there is a formal process for working things out. There is a formal process for getting input and hearing what those people who don't like what you're proposing say is wrong with it. So then the drafters can go back and say, let's reword it, or let's add on those things that we hadn't thought about. So, yes, it might end up in court once in a while. We might have things. But if we could do these things ahead of time, I think we would be in court a whole lot less often.
So what are a few examples of some things that states have put in place that make this process perhaps a little more obvious in terms of what's going to get on the ballot, and perhaps also things that allow us as the people who might sign those petitions and or ultimately vote on these ballot proposals have a better idea of what it is we're deciding?
So in most states that have initiative process, they ask the Attorney General to weigh in on that. We're not proposing that for Michigan because we have had a string of Attorney Generals in the past couple of years that have weighed in on these ballot questions saying they're a good idea or a bad idea. So I think recent history sort of precludes us going down that route. We could look at what Florida has done where they allow the proponents to start collecting signatures to sort of prove that enough people think that this is a good idea. But then they, at some point in the process, they hit the pause button and they go to the Florida Supreme Court and say, this is what we're about. And the opponents have an opportunity to come in and say, we think the court should force you to stop collecting signatures because you didn't do this or you did do that or you haven't thought about these types of things. In some states, there's simply a process before you go out to say, opponents and proponents, make your case why this is good or bad, and make your case why why the drafters didn't do their due diligence and forgot things. And then the people drafting it can listen to those arguments and address those types of things if they need to. There's a group like ours in Louisiana that does research on the ballot questions, and they do an analysis. We do one. We're going to do them at sort of end of summer and beginning of fall leading up to the petition. But Louisiana, they're done way out in front. And then the people have those as they're being approached by petition gatherers to say, here's an analysis of it. Here's something to think about, whether you think this is a good idea that you want to put your name to it. And by doing all these things ahead of time, as I said, you can put that 100-word description on it so there's a clear, concise understanding. The state, many other states, will do an election guide and put it on the state website. So anybody that's interested in how the state's performing or what's going on with to end gerrymandering or to put a part-time legislature to legalize marijuana, they can go to the state and look at all the resources that can be put together ahead of time. So all that information would be good, and instead Michigan has this sort of laissez-faire approach to it, and we end up with less confidence in the process and not enough information to make informed decisions until we actually vote in November.
And the conclusion of your blog notes that Michigan's backloaded process does not serve the citizenry well. Citizens who signed petitions may feel their voices are being muted. And you go on to say that financial supporters may feel their investments are being wasted. But I have to point out that the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has been keeping track of the campaign contributions which have been made to ballot committees, and seven campaigns raised more than $1 million as of April 20th, some of which are not going to get on the ballot. Voters Not Politicians was at $959,000, so it likely has surpassed $1 million by now. I guess it doesn't seem as though these financial contributors are showing a lack of confidence here. There is a lot of money flowing to these campaigns.
Well, we're not involved in the financing. People do things for different reasons, and I would just say we want to instill confidence in government in any way we can. And if we can do it a better way, we should think about doing that.
And as you say, the initiative process was designed to allow grassroots reforms offered outside the political wranglings of the legislative process. All efforts should be made to strengthen that process. Is that the main point you're getting at here, the confidence that people have that a petition is going to actually pass constitutional muster and therefore will actually be allowed on the ballot, and then once that thing is on the ballot, that it's not going to face legal challenges after that?
Yeah, that's the main part of it. Let's provide a process that people can have greater confidence in. But I would also say by front-loading the process, we can have a more informed citizenry so they understand what those petitions are about, if they take care to take the time to find out. But I would suppose that if there is more information, then the newspapers can report on it. And public radio, like yourself, can say, here's a petition that's out there, and there's already information gathered. So if you're approached on a street corner, and they have the petition for this, this is what to think about, whether you want to put your name to that or not. So, yes, greater confidence in the system, but also a more informed citizenry.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. As always, thank you for your time, Eric.
Thank you, Gordon.
A link to his blog post recommending some changes to Michigan's initiative process for ballot proposals can be found at crcmich.org and also through a link at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.